This Pro-Liberty podcast is brought to you by the Health Ranger Store. Visit healthrangerstore.com/MAGA. That's M-A-G-A, like Make America Great Again. Thank you for your support.
Mike Adams.
Humanity has become domineering. It has become dangerous. It has become arrogant. It's kind of like the infant putting his or her hand on a hot stove.
The Health Ranger Report.
We are at that moment right now in human history where we, humanity, are putting our hand on the hot stove and we are about to get burned.
It's time for the Health Ranger Report.
The Health Ranger Report.
And now from naturalnews.com, here's Mike Adams.
I've got a really simple, some would say amazing way to help you ease your own anxiety about the world around you. You might even call this a little bit of a Health Ranger self-help session. But this is very powerful. This is something that I've used for a very long time. You know, a lot of people ask me, how do you stay sane with all this craziness happening around you? How do you handle everything that's going on in our world? All the, you know, all the pesticide poisoning, the ecological destruction, the political wrangling, I guess you could say, disagreement, cultural fracturing, the violence, the war, all these things. How do you handle all that and stay sane? Well, let me get this out of the way. First of all, I spend a lot of time in nature. I make sure that I walk in nature in a forest every single day. So that's just one thing. And that does a lot more than you can imagine. But aside from that, if you don't have access to a forest every day, then here's what you can do. First, realize that most of your anxiety doesn't actually come from things that happen in the world around you. Most of your anxiety is anxiety about not knowing what's going to happen in the world around you. In other words, most of your anxiety is imagined, or maybe a better term would be, it's an anxiousness based on uncertainty. You don't know what's going to happen in the years ahead, and the possibilities range from perhaps okay to incredibly insane or incredibly destructive or incredibly damaging. You don't know what's going to happen. But what if you did know? What if you had, let's just, as a thought experiment, let's just say, what if you had someone from the future come to your living room and tell you how things are going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years, or even over your entire life? What if they could tell you, it turns out that North Korea never launched a nuclear missile. There was never a nuclear war on planet Earth, not in your lifetime. What if they could tell you there was, and you knew which cities were going to be hit and which ones weren't? Either way, your level of anxiety would decrease because you would be able to plan for what's coming and you wouldn't have the uncertainty. So what I'm here to tell you is that I think that most of the anxiousness and the mental tension that people have is due to uncertainty. And to illustrate this in a more elaborate way, imagine that, you know, we know how World War II turned out, right? World War II, devastating war. Tens of millions of people died. And by the way, most of them were Soviets. You know, Soviets lost 20 million people in that war, vastly outnumbering the casualties of the Allied forces, especially the United States. Even the Germans didn't lose that many people. The Soviets really lost a huge number. I mean, just an astonishing number of people. It was a devastating war, destroyed many cities like Dresden in Germany, really destroyed in many ways Berlin. Even London was bombed, not to the extent of Dresden, of course, but London was bombed quite a lot. It caused a lot of destruction all over and loss of life and suffering and pain. And yet, when America was first dragged into that war, let's say like, you know, the early 1940s, 1940, 41, especially, you know, Pearl Harbor, 1942, D-Day, and so on. When we really got into the war, a lot of Americans at that time, adults like you and me, all they could see ahead of them was a very dark road, a road of global warfare, of mass death and suffering. They could not see that that war would end with Hitler's surrender or suicide, in 1945. They couldn't see it. And so as far as they knew, as they were living in the early 1940s and they were maybe having children of their own, as far as they knew, they were raising their children in a war, in a world that was headed for everlasting war. There was no peace on the horizon for any of them. And that created, of course, tremendous stress and tremendous uncertainty. Again, because they could not see that this war would come to a conclusion where the Allies won, where Hitler was defeated, where Japan was defeated, and the Emperor surrendered on the deck of the USS Missouri, if I remember correctly. They didn't have any way to know that. So, but if you could travel back in time and talk to a family that lived in 1940 or 39 or what have you, and tell them, you know what? You here in America, living in Cleveland or living in San Francisco or living in Greeley, Colorado, you are going to be just fine. Yeah, you're going to have to buy some war bonds. Yeah, we're going to put the women to work in factories to make bullets and jeeps and tanks. Yeah, we're going to have a national effort, an economic effort of manufacturing and financing the war. But guess what? We're going to come out of this okay. Hitler's not going to run the world. We're not going to be defeated by socialist fascism, which is what Nazi stands for, by the way. National socialism is really what Nazi stands for. The radical left of socialism and fascism did not win World War II. And so we are, well, relatively free people to this day because we, America, the Allies, we defeated those two evil empires, the Japanese Empire and, of course, the Nazi Empire, the Third Reich. Now, if you had been living in that time and someone had been able to tell you all this in advance, you could have simply planned your timeline. You could have known in your mind, yeah, this is going to be over by 1945, let's say, and all we got to do is make it through that time, and it is a doable project. We can make it through. It's going to be hard. We're going to have to maybe work long hours. We're going to have to watch our expenditures and be very careful with not wasting food, for example. That was a big deal in the 1940s in America. You're going to have to pinch some pennies here and there, but we can get through this. We can make it. Now, I'm here to tell you that right now, you can have that same outlook on the future without needing to know exactly what's going to unfold for the simple reason that you can simply, I know this might sound a little odd, but you can prepare for the worst. You can assume that bad things are going to happen, but that they will be resolved, they won't be permanent, and that you can overcome them with the same kind of planning and the same kind of personal sacrifice that people made in World War II. And you can get through it, and you can come out on the other side okay. And that we, as a human species, we can rebound from any of these big threats, including the threat of World War III or bioterrorism or nuclear terrorism, or other things, loss of fossil water, for example, food collapse, global starvation, all kinds of things, Ebola outbreak, you name it, asteroid strike in the Atlantic that sends a mile-high wave, tsunami that takes out Boston and New York City and so on, whatever. We can actually survive all these things if we simply plan for all of them to potentially happen. And this is really the prepper's creed, and that's what this is getting into now, is prepping. And why does prepping ease your anxiety? Why do preppers feel so comfortable in this world, even though they know more than anyone else that things are going to get crazy? Financial collapse, power grid failure, EMP weapon, North Korea, nuke, all the above. How can preppers be so calm? How can I be so calm about all of this? The answer is because, and this is my little secret that I'm sharing with you, because I assume the worst is going to happen. It's not that I wish for it because I don't. It's that I plan for it. And then I allow myself to be pleasantly surprised when it doesn't happen. Because not every bad thing happens, thank goodness. Some bad things happen. And occasionally some really bad things happen. But for the most part, most of the things you plan for won't happen because you're planning for a lot of bad things. In other words, you're making preparation for, you know, a nuclear power plant meltdown and a water supply shortage and civil unrest in your local city and the government going bankrupt and not being able to fund food stamps anymore, which would set off riots in every major city, and so on down the list. I could list 100 things that can go wrong. You can prepare for all 100 things with a lot of simple overlap. Some basic preparedness strategies can prepare you for all 100 things. Literally, like having extra storable food, like having water filters, like having a means of self-defense, like having the knowledge to read a compass and read a map and navigate your way out on foot if you need to bug out from the area that you're in. All these things give you confidence in surviving almost anything that comes your way. And with the confidence comes a reduction in stress. Why? Because the uncertainties melt away into a certainty of positive outcome. In other words, when you are so capable that you can make it through anything, you don't have anything to worry about, really, because everything that's thrown at you by the world or Mother Nature or war, you know you can get through it. And let me give you another great example of this. Here's the cycle that most people go through. First, they live a big portion of their lives completely oblivious to the reality of bad things that can happen to them. And in this phase, they're usually very, very happy because they're oblivious. So they're happy and smiling and they're partying and they're focused on their social lives and so on. This is usually the younger portion of life, typically people under 30, let's say. And then sometime, usually about in their 30s, people begin to wake up, those who are capable of it, and they start to see that, hey, maybe everything's not awesome as they were told. You know, it turns out, guess what? They're starting to realize, gosh, there could be another Fukushima nuclear disaster. You know, gosh, there could be an EMP grid down scenario. Gee, you know, there could be a level 4 biohazard, a bioweapon released on purpose. That's actually a very big risk. Bill Gates was just warning about that as well. He was saying, like, little terror cells with very little funding could create weaponized viruses very easily and kill, I think he said, 30 million people in the United States. I don't know where he got 30 million. That's his target because he loves depopulation. He wants to get rid of 30 million people. Maybe he's actually encouraging this. I don't know. And that's a different topic. Nevertheless, Mr. Depopulation there is warning about bioweapons. Anyway, whatever it is. People in their 30s, they start to wake up to these possible risks. Usually that's when they start to freak out. They're like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I never thought about that, you know, Seattle could be nuked by North Korea and maybe they're living in Seattle. They're like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Or they're living in Boston and they just found out that the Russians have all these little seabed coastal mole nukes that are burrowed into the seabed and they can be remotely detonated to create a massive tidal wave that wipes out the city of Boston, for example. They just learned about that and they're freaking out. Oh my God, what am I going to do? So people go through this sort of awakening fear stage. And from there, people either go one of two ways. They either stay in fear because they don't prepare. They don't make good decisions and they just sort of live in fear, which, and it's sort of a self-torment at that point because nothing is actually, you know, the world is not causing your anxiety. It's you causing your own anxiety because you're deciding to feel afraid about something that you have no control over, really. Or I guess you do have control in the sense that you could move away from Boston or you could move away from Seattle. You could physically vote with your feet and get out of Dodge and go somewhere that you're safer. That's actually a good preparedness strategy. But then the other way people go when they realize this is they start to plan to lower their risk. And this is when people become preppers. And a lot of people get turned on to prepping in their mid-30s or their late-30s, and then they become lifelong preppers, and they remain preppers through their 40s and 50s and 60s and so on. And as they do more and more prepping, they become more and more confident, which reduces their anxiety, even as their knowledge and awareness of world events continues to expand. So a wise, mature prepper is someone who is fully aware of every threat that we face in our world, and there are hundreds of them, and yet is not psychologically imbalanced by any of those threats, because they have already taken the steps to be prepared against all such threats. And thus they live a life of relative low anxiety, low blood pressure, relative relaxation, relative confidence about the fact that they can handle the future, even if they don't know what that future is. And they also have a mindset of a realist, which is to assume the worst is going to happen, prepare for the worst, and then be happy when it doesn't happen, and enjoy living in your abundance, or enjoy having the extra insurance policy of a storable food supply, for example, or the insurance policy of having extra knowledge. Maybe you have first aid knowledge, medical knowledge, you know, battlefield medicine, radio communications knowledge, what all these kind of prepping skills that you can keep building on throughout your life. You can keep expanding. And that gives you confidence, and that lowers your anxiety. And ultimately, because bad things do happen rarely but repeatedly throughout human history. So catastrophic events repeat, right? They happen over and over and over again. You know, catastrophic volcano, Krakatoa, catastrophic solar flare in the 1850s or whenever that happened in the United States. You know, catastrophic nuclear war that happened in Nagasaki, that happened in Hiroshima, right? These are catastrophic events. And in some of these events, like a nuclear explosion, yeah, you might be instantly killed if you're caught right there at ground zero. You might be instantly killed. That's true. But you can't control that. However, you vastly lower your risk of being caught at ground zero if you are not living at ground zero, or if you have taken other precautions to minimize your risk, your exposure to all of these possible catastrophic events. For example, you can't be buried in the magma lava flow of a volcano if you don't live next to a volcano. Make sense? So let's take Mount Shasta in Northern California. Mount Shasta, pretty obvious when you look at it, it's going to blow someday, right? And you can look at the geology of that, and you can come to an understanding that it's probably not going to blow. I mean, it only blows every, I don't know what the number is, but let's say 200,000 years. I don't know. I'm just guessing. Maybe it's 100,000 years. Maybe it's 50,000 years. I'm not sure. I don't know when it blew last time. I don't know when it's going to blow again, but the risk in terms of a human lifespan is pretty darn low. So if I were living next to Mount Shasta, and I really enjoyed that area, I wouldn't worry about the volcano, but I would have a bug out plan. Right? So if things start to rumble, you grab your bug out bag and you go. It's very simple. But you don't have to panic every day because you're living in the shadow of a giant volcano that's going to blow. Just because the time span of that blowing is very, very small. I'm sorry, very, very large relative to the small duration of a human lifetime. All right. Similarly, Yellowstone National Park is a giant caldera. Now, this caldera is, you might call it sort of a hidden volcano. It's actually not a volcano, it's a caldera, but a lot of people don't know what that means. Basically, the entire lake of the Yellowstone Lake blows sky high once about every 600,000 years. That's what geologists say, and they're probably pretty close to correct on that. It blows about every 600,000 years, and when it blows, it is a supervolcano. It throws so much particulate matter into the atmosphere that basically no food grows for about 2 years while the dust blocks out the sun and just turns the entire sky dark during daytime around the entire planet. So if that were to happen, basically human civilization would collapse. Fortunately, 600,000 years is a very long time. You know, modern human civilization has only been around like 200 years, which is a very tiny fraction of 600,000. And your human lifetime, which let's just say on average is 75 years, is you know, a fraction of that. So the chance of Yellowstone blowing during your lifetime is pretty small. So I wouldn't worry about it. And that's the kind of event, if it does happen, there's not much you can do about it anyway, unless you have a couple of years of storable food and you can fight off all the zombies, right? So you're going to need your flamethrower. You're going to need all the zombie gear, right? So maybe if you have that level of preparedness, you can survive that. Anyway, that's going to be a very difficult scenario, okay? There are other things like suppose there's some supernova star goes boom out there in the cosmos, and or maybe there's a directed burst of energy like a neutron star or something. That I'm not an astronomy an astrophysicist, so I don't know how all that works with stars exploding. But let's just say a star exploded and just sent a big amount of like gamma radiation right at Earth and just blasted away our planet. You're not going to survive that, right? Nobody is. You can't control that. That's space weather. You can't control that. So don't fret about it. If that happens, it's just like God rebooting Earth. You know, basically we all go together when we go, you know, that's the old Tom Lehrer song. Well, he was singing about nukes, but it also applies to exploding stars. If that happens, it's just a reboot. Nothing you can do about it. And you're probably not even going to notice it anyway. Just boom, it's over. You're no longer here, and you don't have to file with the IRS anymore. So there's a lot of things that could happen, but there's no need to fret about it. Most things are survivable with a little bit of preparedness. Some things that are not survivable are so monumental that that's not worth worrying about anyway. I mean, anybody could be killed at any moment by anything. You could have an airplane fall out of the sky and land on your head. And that's happened to some people. Not a lot of people, but some people. It would have made no sense for those people to live their lives worried that an airplane was going to fall out of the sky and land on their head, because the risk of that was so low that it's almost zero. So who worries about that kind of thing? There's no sense in it. So don't worry about the big catastrophic things that you can't control. And in fact, don't worry about the things that you can control either, because you can prep for those things. And that gives you confidence. So I hope this is making some sense. I'm sharing with you, this is a very personal philosophy of mine as well. This is how I can wake up and tackle each day and look at what's going to happen in our world and not be overwhelmed by it, even if it gets bad. I got to tell you, you will definitely want to tune into my podcast and my website if we get into a nuclear war, because that doesn't faze me a bit. I mean, nothing fazes me. No apocalypse is going to throw me off my game, because I've already considered everything. I've already planned for everything. It's like, there's really nothing that can happen that's going to surprise me in terms of some kind of big disaster or act of war or grid down, you know, EMP, solar wave, tidal wave. You name it, I've covered it and I've prepared for it. And many of the people that follow my work have also prepared for it. So they're not going to freak out either. So it might be useless. If the internet's not working, you're not going to be able to find me after that event. But tune in now while you can, and I'll help you get prepared for that. I am the guy that you want around when stuff hits the fan. I guarantee you that. I'm the guy, like, if you're in a nuclear submarine 500 feet underwater or 1,000 feet underwater, and everything goes wrong with that submarine, I'm the guy you want there, because I can solve that problem without freaking out. Whatever the problem is, we can solve it. We can make it through that problem. It's not a problem, because I solve problems every day that you wouldn't even believe. I mean, just like in the laboratory, solving crazy problems that like no other lab has overcome, and we're solving them. Yeah. I mean, I'll give you a specific example, although this might be a little bit off topic. Like, how do you do automatic robot pipetting of 1,000 microliters into a vial that requires over 10 different pipette steps because of the dilutions of different external standards, and end up with a final volume in the vial that is plus or minus 0.4% accuracy? In other words, out of 1,000 microliters, we might get 1,004 or 996. That's the kind of, and we solve those problems every day in the lab. And it's just a small example. I mean, I know that's not life-threatening or anything, but life-threatening problems really are solvable in the same kind of algorithmic way. You look at the problem, you consider solutions, you take action, you take steps, you work the problem, just like a pilot that has an emergency in the sky. You know, I'm trained as a pilot as well. And it's part of the training. When you're up there flying around, your flight instructor just cuts the engine. It's a standard part of fixed wing aircraft training. Every pilot goes through it. And if you can't work the problem and get on the correct glide path and restart the engine, or, you know, double check you know, switch to the other Magneto set or whatever you need to do, you are going to die. So you got to just work the problem and stay calm and not freak out. And so, you know, I did that in flight training, not a problem. It was like, it was really smooth and it was really fun. I was like, cut it again, you know. My flight instructor cut it in a night flight scenario. So we were flying around at night, which is kind of dangerous because you can't really see where to land if you have to glide into a field. And he's up there and he's like, yeah, you see that runway over there? I'm like, I'm looking for the flashing light, the beacon for the airport, you know? He's like, do you see that runway over there? I'm like, no, I really don't see that runway. And he's like, well, look even closer. And then he grabs the throttle and cuts the engine. And we're only at like 1,200 feet or something. He's like, yeah, what are you going to do now, buddy? So you work the problem. You know, there you are, gliding along with no engine, no power, no landing lights, nothing. In a fixed-wing aircraft, in the middle of the night, you can't see anything below you. How do you solve that problem? Well, we solved it because I'm still here to tell you about it. And, of course, that was just simulated emergency. But the same thing applies to real emergencies, real problems. So, in any case, whatever goes wrong in the world, I can help you work through the problem. I can help you get to survivability and a drastic reduction in anxiety. So just tune in to healthrangerreport.com or naturalnews.com or even survival.news, one of my many websites. And I'm here for you. I'm going to do my best in every emergency that comes up, whether it's economic or World War III or an environmental crisis of some kind, no matter what it is, I'm going to give you my honest assessment, try to reduce your anxiety, try to help you get prepared so that you can make it through anything that comes your way. And if you're just even a little bit resilient, you'll make it through. You can survive this. Yeah, you can. Look, you can even survive a 90% population collapse in the global population. Yes, you can be among the 10% who live. No question about it. If you prepare at all, you're already in the top 1%, basically, of the world population. Look, 99% of the world population has never prepared anything. They live, you know, hand to mouth or paycheck to paycheck in America. 99% of the world population is on the verge of dying almost in less than, you know, a month. I don't need to go there. I'm just saying, you can be among even the 1% with just a little bit of preparedness and a little bit of mental fortitude, some determination to survive. You know how Navy SEALs survive? The answer is they decide to. And then they do the training, right? And they get the skill set, but it's a mindset. U.S. Navy SEALs are survivors in every situation you throw at them. Otherwise, they won't even make it through the training, by the way. They are survivors because they decide to. A situation, they're thrown into something. They come into that situation with a mindset from day, you know, from the first moment, saying, I'm going to succeed in this mission, and I'm going to survive, and here's how I'm going to do it. And failure is not an option. You know, dying is not an option in this scenario. So how do we get to the final, how do we work out the problem here and come out successful in this? It's a mindset. And if you have that mindset, you can make it through really almost anything. So as I often say, I hope you found this valuable. I'm always humbled to be able to share this kind of information with you and maybe help pass along some lessons that I've learned in my life. And I do believe that we are headed for a very difficult time. Some of the bad things that could happen will happen. Probably many of them will happen, come to think of it. Financial collapse, you know, global war, conflict, perhaps nuclear events, food supply shortage, right? Lots of things, perhaps nuclear terrorism or biological terrorism. Lots of things are, I think, going to happen in the next few years, but it doesn't mean that we run and hide or live in fear or live with anxiety. We just get ready for them. We assume they're going to happen, and then we live with a sense of pleasant surprise if any of them don't happen. And we are among the survivors. That's it. It's very simple because we've already decided to be there. We've taken steps to do that. We are determined to not just survive, but then to contribute to the rebuilding of society that grows out of the collapse of this one. And that's even more important. And I'll cover that in other podcasts. I hope you found this podcast useful. Thank you for listening. My name's Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out other podcasts at healthrangerreport.com.
Learn more at healthrangerreport.com.
I know you have a lot of choices of where to get your superfoods and supplements, personal care products, and so on. To find all these solutions and more, just go to healthrangerstore.com/MAGA, M-A-G-A. healthrangerstore.com/MAGA, as in Make America Great Again. You'll find hundreds of solutions there that can enhance and help protect your health. Again, that's healthrangerstore.com/MAGA. At the Health Ranger Store, we are a pro-liberty, pro-life, pro-freedom, pro-America manufacturer and direct distributor. We sell direct to customers, offering extraordinary values on these products. Lab tested and verified, we test all of our products for bacteria, E. coli, salmonella, yeast and mold, heavy metals, lead, cadmium, arsenic, mercury, much more. Also glyphosate and herbicide and other pesticides and herbicides are being added to our testing procedure to make sure that we bring you safe, verified, clean supplements that you just don't get anywhere else. I mean, Amazon.com is a joke compared to us. The Wall Street Journal even did a story exposing the thousands of contaminated, illegal, banned, toxic supplements and products that Amazon sells. We wouldn't sell that because we have ethics, we have morality, we're honest, we have integrity as a manufacturer and a provider of these products. Check us out, healthrangerstore.com. Over 700 different products are available right now. High-end supplements, superfoods, personal care products, even fragrance-free products that are eco-friendly for your home, such as laundry detergent, body soap, dishwasher detergent, and many other products. You'll find just an incredible assortment at healthrangerstore.com. And most importantly, your purchases there help support our ongoing efforts to spread the message of liberty and freedom and pro-life, respecting life in all its forms, and having a nation and a world that operates with ethics and morality so that we might have a sustainable human civilization, not one that's collapsing in destitution and suffering, which is what the radical left and the communists want to bring about. So support us, and we support humanity. HealthRangerStore.com. I thank you for your support.